This is the February 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day will include Jerry Golke. He's with the Golke Group out of Rockford, Illinois. Matt Bennett will join us from Windsor, Illinois and agmarket.net. And Greg Johnson is here too from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, out of Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. And there today, you can register for our Spring Outlook in conjunction with the Farm Doc team here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. It's Tuesday, March the 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $25. You can find all the details online at willag.org and register today. Now, let's begin our program. Because of the big moves in the marketplace on Thursday, I recorded this program with each individual separately on Friday morning. We'll start by taking up the cash grain situation with Greg Johnson from TGM.
Let's start with soybeans first. There's more of a pattern, consistent pattern with soybeans. Usually China comes in and buys U.S. soybeans in that November, December, January timeframe, February, and then they shift their focus to buying South American beans. So we typically see basis levels improve during that time frame for U.S. soybeans as there's demand out of the Gulf for those soybeans. And we've seen that once again this year. Now we're starting to see it back off a little bit, which is typical as we get through February and South America or China turns to buying from South America. The one difference this year is with the dry weather down in South America and the poorer crop, the rumor, the thinking is that China may need to buy, return to the U.S. market and buy more beans to make up for that shortfall out of Brazil that they were anticipating to buy. So right now we're seeing bean basis drop a little bit, which is typical, but we may see that bean basis improve if in fact China does come back in and buy beans from the United States.
The Brazilians have long said that they will service the export market first, relatively speaking. I think for corn and soybeans, does that worry you at all in this context?
Well, that's the right thing to say from their point of view. They don't want to lose a customer. They don't want to lose market share. If you show that you're an unreliable supplier, once that demand goes somewhere else, it's hard to get it back. So I'm sure they will try as best they can to supply that export market as best they can. But, you know, if the crop is really that short, they may not be able to. And like I say, that's the rumor. We'll have to wait and see. If we really do see China come back in and buy U.S. soybeans here in another 3 to 4 weeks, then obviously, they couldn't get enough coverage from South America, but that hasn't happened yet. But that's what we're keeping an eye on as far as soybean basis is concerned.
Because China, over the last several years, has been such a large importer of U.S. soybeans through the Gulf almost has a pattern, too, where it switches from exporting soybeans to exporting corn for loadout. Can you see any difficulties with soybeans being put back into play through the export market?
Yes, that's a potential snag. There's only so many boats to load, and you can only load so many boats a day. And if we're loading 10% more soybean boats, then we either need to increase capacity, which isn't going to happen, or you load 10% less corn, or you stretch it out over a longer period of time, and maybe you're still loading corn trains in August, September, rather than finishing up in July, August. So, yes, that's a definite potential problem that, I think everybody's aware of. What the answer is, people are just going to try to, get things loaded as quick as they can. But if China does, in fact, buy more U.S. soybeans, that will kind of have a snowball effect on getting corn loaded out in a timely fashion.
For new crop corn and soybeans, how have producers in your draw area positioned themselves so far, and what are your expectations?
Corn sales from farmers, both old crop and new crop, have been very slow. I think farmers are concerned about the higher input costs, whether they personally got them locked in ahead of time or not. They've heard enough stories that other people didn't get them locked in, that they're just, there's a big uncertainty about how many acres of corn will or will not get planted. And so it feels like they're willing at this point to wait until March 31st to see that government estimate on corn acres before they really step up to the plate and sell old crop, more old crop and new crop corn. And quite frankly, doing nothing has been the right thing to do so far. It's been hard to argue with sitting back and letting the market continue to go higher. And I think they will continue to do that on corn until we get to the March 31 acreage report or until we see inputs come down, whichever comes first. But as far as soybeans, we are buying a fair amount, probably more than normal, both old crop and new crop beans. Again, it's hard to argue with $16 old crop beans, $14 new crop beans. Farmers understand that they could go higher in this inflationary period, but those are profitable levels, and farmers are doing a pretty good job. I would say they're probably getting a third sold on new crop beans, and normally we're probably 20 to 25% purchased as of this date. So a little bit higher than normal. They've still got a lot of bullets left in case these beans do go higher, but they're definitely more willing to sell old crop and new crop beans on this rally than they are old crop and new crop corn.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with the TGM facility, the grain elevator that belongs to Total Grain Marketing in Champaign County, Illinois. There are 40 elevators, by the way, in that system. I also talked this week for Commodity Week with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. While we took up the cash grain situation with Greg, I started with Matt by taking up crop budgets for the 2022 growing season. I know that varies a lot, and how farmers might put that in context with their marketing plans.
Yep, that's a really good question. The first part of that, of course, it seems to me that a lot of folks took advantage of prepay pricing on fertilizer. I would say more so dry fertilizer than anhydrous, but I do think several producers, especially in our part of the world here in central Illinois, the I states, if you will, prepaid dry and anhydrous. And so where it gets tricky is those that didn't prepay anhydrous, you know, whether they applied dry or not, we all know that you can still go ahead if, unless you sprayed some sort of a program, in the fall. We all know that you can go ahead and plant soybeans in that situation. So if you didn't get the anhydrous on, of course, we're still looking at $1,500 type anhydrous levels. Here's the thing, Todd. If you did prepay prices, you're looking at sub $300 an acre for an N, P, and K program that's fairly aggressive. You know, whereas the 2021 crop year, those N, P, and K levels on a cost basis ran about $170, $175 an acre. So yes, it was higher, but it wasn't the 425 to 450 we're currently looking at as far as the spot fertilizer market goes. So for those types of producers, they're definitely in a profitable situation whenever you start to look at the fact that their cost factor is not nearly as high as what people predicted that it might be for the 22 crop. So I'm strongly recommending that producers at least get a floor under some prices as we continue to rally. Of course, we've got February crop insurance setting period. And for those that are going to have an aggressive crop insurance plan, level that they go to, revenue, whatever it might be, I certainly would be locking in some of those insured bushels at what I would call very profitable prices, because most of the break-evens we're looking at, if you had prepaid fertilizer, are well under $5.
And for soybeans?
I think when it comes to soybeans, the interesting thing, you know, someone will remind you, well, you've got to apply, some of your cost factor on fertilizer to soybeans. I think most producers still, spread fertilizer every other year in our part of the world, especially, you got to remember that 2020 fertilizer was at multi-year lows. And so if in that case, you're attributing fertilizer to soybeans, it's still going to be a very negligible cost compared to, the kind of spot fertilizer price we're looking at for the 22 crop. So you can put beans in the ground significantly cheaper. I know that the farm doc guys do a fantastic amount of work on that and a really good analysis of it. I guess from my vantage point, I've seen a lot of producers on the corn side of things without a whole lot of land costs getting well over $1,000 an acre to put the corn crop in the ground. You know, whereas on soybeans, you're looking at a solid $300 or $400 an acre less, almost on average. I mean, we've seen a huge discrepancy there. So, you know, from the soybean producer standpoint, 1440, as you and I are speaking, you know, is just an incredibly profitable level for most of the producers that we've looked at. We've seen a lot of break evens, a solid $2.50 to $3 below that. So with that being the case, you certainly have to think that it would be wise to at least set a floor in. I mean, a lot of producers in our part of the world, again, can sell $14 plus out of the field currently. I don't want to lock in a ton of physical bushels without some room to the upside. I've been preaching flexibility all year, and I'll continue to, because this is a dynamic market that could get completely out of hand if we end up having issues here in the U.S. this summer.
On input prices, how concerned are you about the price of pesticides, herbicides going through the 2022 growing season?
You know, initially the prices that we received didn't shock me as much. Now you're starting to hear some quote unquote horror stories about people going to pick up chemical and it not being there, even though it was paid for already. I know that some logistical issues are certainly popping up, and I've got a lot of concern there, you know, about the logistics of it. And of course, if you have to really push on people to be able to get some of these products, it's going to drive up the cost of transportation, which is going to further drive up the cost of herbicides and insecticides. I know most producers have got, you know, let's face it, more cash in their pocket right now than what they've had in a long time. So most of them are going to step in here and prepay all of that fertilizer. I mean, you know, not just fertilizer, but fungicide, insecticide, you name it, pesticides. And so you've got to make the assumption they're going to get the product. But I'm a little concerned that not only, as you suggest, the price is going to be higher, but being able to get a hold of the product, I think, could be a bigger issue. I know in South America, they're having some serious issues getting a hold of atrazine in some areas. And they're worried how that's going to impact corn production this year. So, you know, some of these logistical issues worldwide are certainly becoming a major issue that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on.
Problem with Roundup and Liberty?
You know, I'm hearing more problems with Liberty than I am Roundup currently. At the same time, both of them are problems. You know, you don't know for sure if you're going to get everything that you asked for. But obviously, this could be one of those situations where there's some haves and have-nots. And I certainly wouldn't want to be in the retail business right now. That's just a tough spot to sit. I don't know exactly how that's going to all unfold and work itself out. But by no means are we sitting in a situation without stress this year, not only for the producer, but for the retailer. So we certainly have to hope that people are able to get a hold of everything they need. But again, Liberty is the one that I've heard the most issue with that folks are not going to be able to get a hold of like they're hoping to.
Given all of that, you said farmers need to leave themselves open for the upside. How do you do that for new crop corn and soybeans?
Yeah, and so what I'm getting at, Todd, is this. You know, in 2012, I know you remember as well as anybody that the market started its march higher there in the springtime and just kept running, you know, because once we actually got into the month of June and we realized we had an issue, it was a oh shoot type moment, you know, and the market just kept going. Well, producers were selling at $5.50, $6.50, and just enjoying every bit of it, thinking we'd get the bailout rain. Rain never showed up. And so I am concerned. You know, I've been able to speak on the same in the same venue as Eric Snodgrass this year and Kirk Hines from Bam Weather and Drew Lerner. And all of them are saying that there's some concern about the summer growing season. And so you've got to be concerned about what the upside might look like. If you're a producer that wants to go ahead and sell some corn or beans, I'm okay with that, but buying a call or a call spread certainly makes sense to me. So let's say that you know your break even is sub $5, and shoot, Todd, if you're selling basis the board at 590, you know, obviously you've got to figure your basis in, but if you're spending 30 cents on an expensive call play to keep you in the game, you know, you're still looking at 560, which is significantly above your break even with room to the upside. That's one way of looking at it. The other way, is to put a floor in under the market and let the upside run. And so whether you simply buy a put option, it's extremely expensive. I understand that. But you are also going to be able to lock in, again, some worst case scenarios that are well above break even. So if that's the case, there's a whole host of different ways to do it. But I would highly recommend producers that are considering these types of strategies, you know, to get a level of protection, at least over the next, say, couple, 3 months, get you through planting intentions to where we know a little bit more about what's going on. And we do that by purchasing short dated options, which are options based upon harvest delivery. It's just that they expire earlier, and it gives you the ability to buy those options without all that time value associated. So there's several different ways to play this. It's just a matter of, we got to at least cover our rear end, because there's no question that things look really good right now, but things don't necessarily continue to look this good throughout the whole growing season if the wrong things happen.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. We spoke with him Friday morning about crop budgets and marketing new crop corn and soybeans here in the United States. However, I wanted also to take a macro look at the marketplace and call Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group out of Rockford, Illinois, to take up particularly soybeans and what's happening across the planet.
Well, you're right about the, we need to really take a look at a macro outlook, and that means, you know, a long time. That means really starting with what's happened in Brazil, particularly in Argentina and Paraguay and Uruguay, started to develop later in December, later on in the late December, and then, of course, after the first week in January, our contacts there said that this crop is a lot worse than their trade, so to speak, would anticipate it was. And I think we started out around 145 million, another record, you know, which this happened year after year in Brazil until something changes. And that's what happened. So it started coming down. And then we were close to that 132, 34 area. And then recently down to 130, like now the rest of the folks are coming. Even, you know, Dr. Courtney Ayer, who's down there, has a firsthand knowledge of it, perhaps is at 130 now. USDA, and by the way, a little bit has a negative bias from there. USDA is slow like normal. You know, like they told me 20 years ago, we report the facts as we see them. We don't. Our job isn't to speculate. That's your job, Jerry. If you think it's different, then you speculate on that. We have to report what we know for fact. And of course, now they've dropped it 5 million tons down, I think, to 134. They're likely 5 million tons more. So that reduction in South America, when you look at it, is probably close to, 17 million metric tons if we end up getting it right with Paraguay and Uruguay and Argentina, and maybe 15 in that area. But regardless, that's a significant amount of grain that has to be replaced for crushing purposes by now, really, the United States. And because you've got all of... you know, Paraguay ships beans to Argentina to crush for meal, and they're one of the biggest meal crushers. Now, they have a problem in having enough beans to crush, even though they have the capacity. We don't have the capacity necessarily in the United States to offset what's been lost in Argentina and generally in South America. So the government's slow to realize this. But I think you can see the market, how it's all of a sudden taken off, especially in 2022, is trying to discover price discovery system, a level at which we're beginning to say we're going to have to curb demand somehow to meet the supply that we're going to have next fall with the United States acreage increase, hopefully, they're hoping, and then the total supply until we harvest another crop that's available about a year from now, you know, in South America. So we've got a year-long problem that's evolving over time. In the meantime, you know, you're going to sell beans out of South America. You're going to sell old crop beans out of North America and other places. We're not going to sit on $13 or $14 or $15, $17 beans, whatever. They're going to sell some of them. The push comes, the problems come. Contrary to the last few years, and even last year, South America had a bigger crop than expected. They were in our space or in our face at the time when we normally export grain in the fall, soybean market. They were in there selling China beans well into December because they always seem to come up with more. This year now it appears that by August 1st, they may be out of beans, anybody out of beans and meal to ship. And consequently, here we are in a space between August and our harvest time, which means that we got to crush the beans. They're available October 1st as the new crop year for oil and bean our meal. We got a problem out in there that could say we need to keep the price of soybeans relatively high into that period of time, especially to obtain those beans, to be able to finally know what's going on in South America for the following year. So that macro outlook is a long time. And this volatility, we saw it on Thursday, and we're seeing it on Friday morning again. Wild. I've been there before. I was there in 2012 and 11 when we saw a wild situation. This is nothing like 2011 and 12. We're seeing this now, not because of a drought and we see a new crop coming. We're seeing, and in South America, to replace what we lost. Now it's the shoes on the other foot. And we're seeing this in February, that there's a problem with carryover on into 2023 calendar year. Whatever we curb demand for meal and maybe oil, if we can, that's going to have to, that will come back again a year from now when, you've rationed, you've done some things, you've lowered ration, whatever it's going to take to get it done. Then we come back in the following year and we'll need whatever South America can produce. Having said all that, now, how do I deal with President Biden and Putin and China and all the things that are evolving that could totally upset the apple cart? And I look at it from a historical standpoint. I was around when Nixon embargoed soybeans to our friends in Japan. And he was the first, a Republican, and then a Democrat did it, and Carter. And Reagan orchestrated it through his budget reconciliation type of thing. He did one of, and high interest rates, one of the worst agriculture recessions that I've seen in my lifetime. And now we have a dilemma that says, are we going to continue to burn soybean oil for fuel and maybe some palm oil and hurt the very people in the world that we were thinking we're going to save their lives from the green theory? And now that they're going to have high-priced food and so forth, what does a politician do in the best interest of the public? And there lies the rub. Volatility, your opinion, my opinion, the rest of the world is going to govern this market. But this is the most exciting time I've seen for the potential for soybeans to get significantly at a high level or even higher should we not get a crop or we not get 5 million acres of farm futures things. I don't think that'll happen, but, we're not planning yet,
So I have some questions about soybeans and the products in particular. Will you be watching meal to see what it does? And it's had a bad day and a half here to figure out where this market is going. Is what we're seeing a stutter step in the process? It feels to me as if meal is the place that you're most concerned about, and the export market out of South America or Argentina for it.
Yeah, and that's right. I think we have a problem to resolve in meal first, in a background, though, where we really need the oil, because that, I call it veggie diesel situation, has not gone away. There's three new plants, I believe, coming online and after July 1st that want to produce, switch from gasoline to refining soybeans for the soybean oil, and they see paybacks in this as it sets now in maybe three to four years. They think they can get a payback by virtue of the subsidy and so forth that California has. But meal would be the first thing, because if you recall, about a year ago we said we're going to oil is the one that's going to help the bean price, and that's going to be the driver now. And meal is what, and the comments were, and I even made them, if you're going to do all this, use all this soy oil and crush all these beans, what are you going to do with the meal? We got abundance of meal. Suddenly that all changed in South America, like it does when you got two major producers in the world. And now you have a problem where you've got to come up with more meal because of Argentina, and that's changed. And so now meal becomes the governing. And we see that slowly transition in that spread relationship with meal coming on more. So if you go back and look, I do a lot of technical stuff, as you know, and we had technical buy signals on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis, under $400, and it's been going up since then. The front end month is $50 a ton, roughly higher than what October is. So you see this inverted market. So that's indicating to me that the market thinks we're going to get more soybeans out of Jerry and his friends on farming. And come fall, we're going to be able to have more beans available that we won't have to pay $500 for a meal. We'll be able to do it for $400 or less. And we've just yesterday, actually, was the first day we started buying meal in addition to front months in coverage for next fall coverage, just because we think that's going to be a focus as we see new crop soybeans. If we don't get the acres, then we got a problem out there that I think the world's going to come after soybean meal from us. So I'll be watching the meal situation export-wise, which we today on Friday we had a report that soybean oil was in a flash sale, which is interesting. So you get a sense that the world is coming to realizing what I'm talking about, perhaps, or is making plans that say, maybe I better get my hands on something, because like with me with fertilizer, and we have clients that we're doing our survey now that are going to buy $1,500 anhydrous that they paid $700 or $800 for last fall or last summer, whenever they put it on. They're going to finish off with that. And their main concern, not so much the cost, is that, am I really going to be able to get it? And so if you're buying food and fiber, you're saying, you know, it's a lot of money, but that's not the point. It's a matter of getting, it's inelastic now. I've got to get my hands on it, and I'm going to buy it while the United States is still selling it. So a whole dynamic shift that's very difficult to get our hands around, I think, and to realize unless you dwell into it. And my job is that I look at that from a mathematical standpoint and a fundamental standpoint, and I say, how would we get there from here? And I know how we do that, by reducing demand. But then you say, at what price will that happen in an inelastic market that doesn't have enough soybeans now, we'll say globally, that is going to be able to produce that that supply short of a big game. We can use that 5 million extra acres. And then where does that come from? Corn, and probably it'll probably come from a little bit out of corn, and of course spring wheat in North Dakota is North Dakota. You know, has got the biggest, as you know, the largest county produces beans. That looks a little better than hard red spring wheat because of the nitrogen costs for that and so forth. But guys got burned on soybeans last year, and they say from an insurance standpoint, corn still looks pretty good. So we're going to plant beans and corn, but there won't be a kernel of hard red spring wheat in our 12,000 acres in North Dakota.
How high do you think soybeans can go?
Yeah, we get that point. I guess my gut feeling is, well, that the educated guess would be that it has to go high enough to where somebody has to go without. And I don't know exactly where that's at. I go back in history, and if you notice, we've been to 2011 and 12. We were pretty high. I think our high was 17. I thought once we hit $20 someplace, but I wouldn't be surprised if things fall into place like they should, that we go to record highs. We did it already in palm oil. We're also close to doing it in soybean oil. We topped out at those highs before, but I would watch soybean oil, and meal has been a lot higher in the past, but palm oil, you know, got up there high enough to where now they're curbing exports. They're saying you got to sell 20% of your exportable supplies into the domestic market to keep inflation down in Malaysia. So when you, there could be a very well a demand for our soybean oil in exports. If you look at a pie chart globally, and Willard Sparks pointed this out to me, you know, 25 years ago, we were a small fish in a big pond of edible oils. Palm oil was the biggest one in the world. And he said, if you lose 10% of the production in palm oil and you have to replace that with soybean oil, it could almost double our normal exports because we were a small part of that. So all of a sudden you eliminate our supplies of oil unless you crush more. And now it's not so bad because soybean oil has gained market share or quantity wise in the total quantity of all edible oils. But there's difficulty in getting sunflower seed planted. I think Russia has or overseas, they've got a problem with that. And guys in North Dakota are going around trying to get sunflower seed contracts, and they're having to raise prices for the oil variety significantly in order to get anybody interested. And we're not so interested because it ruins our soil. You know, it's got a 6-foot taproot that takes the moisture out, you know. So we're competing with a lot of other stuff there, but I don't know where that goes. I guess I watch the market, and when I get my clues that it's high enough, market will probably tell me. But that presents a problem that we may already be in, where you'd have, you know, and I think Matt Bennett points it out greatly by saying, you know, you just can't turn down $12, $13, $14, $15 beans out of the field. But at some point, you got to say to yourself, I how much do I want to risk that I don't want to, you know, you can hedge it and get out of it, but it's very risky in these kind of an atmosphere we're in that says, you know, for me, I don't think I want more than 40% of my crop forward contracted at even high prices without the flexibility of being able to change my mind. That makes me nervous a little bit about hedge to arrive, because I'm locked in. I talked to my elevator and he said, you sell me hedge to arrive contract, you can get out if you don't produce it, or you can roll it, but we want the beans. We want the corn, and that's their way of getting physical possession of the product. And so we muddle through this, and every day, of course, you hear a comment by a political official, and that can ruin the market. I mean, you know, years ago, they didn't talk about things when the market was open, you know, but now, you know, Trump kind of set the precedence, and now we're even hearing it during the day on beans. Or any of the commodities where a political person will say something that moves the markets, and very, very difficult to maintain a big position for any of these guys that are out there.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program on our website at willag.org, willag.org. And there now you'll find details of our Spring Outlook meeting in conjunction with the Farm Doc team to be held on Tuesday, March the 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $25, and that concludes the Farm Doc team, the panelists from WILL, the whole event. Eric Snodgrass will be there as well, all day long, including not only your lunch from the Beef House, but Beef House rolls and coffee in the morning, all for $25. Sign up today, right now, at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.